I'm Gene Kansas. You're listening to Sidewalk Radio. We cover the arts, architecture, design, development, city planning, preservation. Today's show, passion for porches.
Three creaky wooden stairs, those squeaky rocking chairs, the well-worn welcome mat, the lattice vines, the happy times. All I wanna do when the day is through is linger here on the front porch with you.
As the summer wanes and the night air grows cooler, and the air conditioner finally assumes its proper role as convenience instead of necessity, this period of early evening leisure and tranquility, this is the season of porches.
We'll watch the fireflies sparking, do some sparking too.
It is interesting to consider the relative disparity between how central porches are in our popular imagination of the South, conjure Gone with the Wind here, versus how scarce they actually tend to be in the landscape of the city. Many of Atlanta's oldest neighborhoods and homes, the very ones that you would naturally assume to be anchored by that vision of rocking chair-enabled serenity, don't have one, or have only had one added relatively recently as kind of an architectural afterthought. And just as interestingly, the trend seems to have reversed, and porches are now a must-have luxury for all new homes being built. So that's what we'll be talking about today, how the role and significance of porches has evolved over time, and how they have been an unexpectedly important place in the historical and cultural development of the South.
All I wanna do when the day is through is linger here on the front porch with you.
My guests today are architect and founder of Historical Concepts, Jim Strickland.
I think we kind of provide a room, we provide a vessel, we provide some place for memories. And I think when we look at old porches, we try to understand what made that porch.
Chair of Emory University's Department of Environmental Studies, Uriel Kitron.
I always say that if you go out of your house and you get bitten by a mosquito, it's probably the tree, because only the female mosquitoes bite, grew up very close to you. The mosquitoes will not fly very far unless they have to.
Author of Swinging in Place, Jocelyn Donlan.
The porch thrived in the South because of the weather. I mean, that's pretty obvious, but it still is the fundamental drive. You know, you just had to get out of the house to cool off. And, you know, the heat also, I think, drives the kind of love of storytelling in the South, because sometimes it's just too hot to do anything but sit and talk. So the front porch is a public space that is, it's a kind of a theater, I think.
And Kathleen Oskadal, a furniture designer with an updated vision of the rocking chair.
Now that I have it, I haven't really even sat in it very much because I finished it right before I graduated, and then we figured out a place to hang it, and it was a little precarious, so everyone was afraid to sit in it. So I've sat in it like once, very briefly.
Oh, rocking chairs got me, son. Cane by my side. Oh, fetch me that gin, son, before I tan you hide. I can't get away from this old cabin. Lord knows I'd gone nowhere. I'm just sitting here slapping and grabbing at these flies round my old rocking chair. You old Aunt Harriet, in heaven she may be. Swing low, sweet chariot, it's the end of my troubles I see. Oh, rocking chair's got me, son. Judgment day is nigh, and I'm chained to my old rocking chair.
You're listening to Sidewalk Radio. I'm your host, Gene Kansas. Today's show, Passion for Porches.
You know, traditional architecture to me is it's the people's architecture. It's something that is evolved. It's something that has been generation to generation. When I was in grad school, we certainly did some very avant-garde things that was there. But when I got out of school and started doing, architecture design, it was very interesting. It was a thing that sold. Doing a white ship on the plains didn't sell in Georgia. Georgia was looking for part of its history. And what was really interesting for me when I started in the 70s, all of a sudden, kind of the heritage of the South, the heritage of old architecture was found.
I think that really is a nice way to get into this Southerners, especially passion for porches.
Well, it's nostalgia just in some ways. I was thinking about it from the time that you kind of invited, and I was talking to my wife, and I remember our porch that we had was a very small porch. And in fact, it could be classified as a stoop. It was like a 4x6, and I was thinking about sitting out there with my father as a really youngster and shooting caps. And I also remember sitting out there after mowing the yard with my father. And so these times that are there, and getting the first sip of beer when I guess I was probably about 9. But it was a great memory, and it's a memory that stays with me. And I think about my wife. They had a Brookwood Hills, a small porch. I guess it couldn't have been more than 10x12, but it was the rites of spring. Every year, my wife can remember painting the glider. That glider must have had 50 coats of paint on it. But, that's when the bird was brought out and put on the porch. And that's when all the people were out there talking and the fragrances. And I think memories are not only about the people you were there with, but also the sounds, the smells. It was just, it's an interesting time going back. And, of course, I don't think of myself as a historian of porches. I am aware of the different periods and the different things that were there, but more as an observer, more as an appreciator of the things that happened on the porch and what we have done over the years.
Let's talk about kind of the more functional uses of porches from a living sense and architectural sense for a moment.
Well, I think the porch is from a it's got a very functional thing. I mean, a lot of business was transpired on the porch in the South. People came up to that, and jobs and chores were given from the porch. And you were only invited into the house as a very special occasion. So the porch was like another room. It was cheaper to build. It didn't have the windows. It didn't have all the siding. You think about somebody actually cutting siding in a saw pit and what it took to put siding up. So I think that the porch, maybe in the early 1800s, started to occur. We didn't see as much of it in colonial times. But certainly in the South, it's been something that was a continuation of the house. I mean, you met out there, you were there. And I often say that Mama got electricity and she enclosed part of the porch, and that's when the kitchen came and when the bathroom and all the other things that that was there during the 1900s.
Is there, or what is the difference between the front and the back porch?
I think the front porch often might have been the latest period of design. I know that we had neoclassical that came in. We also had a lot of the Greek architecture in the early 1800s, mid 1800s, where you even saw up in Rhode Island, you'd see a Greek porch now that might only be two bays or one bay appear on something that was a colonial house. So I think it was a particularly kind of a style. What might have been seen as a status symbol. Certainly in the South, you see when you had the masonry homes early on where the house, this was even prior to balloon framing and timber framing, you might see a porch that goes all the way around it. And you had high ceilings and transoms, and they would be able to let up you know, all of that and open it up so you had those breezes that would move through from the porch.
So porches weren't really part of the original design of the house?
Many porches were an afterthought. When you see a colonial house or you see something that might be a revival that's on the style, how many porches do you see? And of course, you do in New Orleans and in Louisiana, where the porch was actually part of the roof. It was already planned that way. And how many times do you see it as a shed that was added to the roof? Or how many times do you see it where it was dropped beneath the additional cornice, the old cornice, and came out to different places?
What about in Atlanta? I mean, we have a bunch of different neighborhoods here.
Yeah.
Are the porches different? Where is our heritage most conspicuous in this design?
I think the Atlanta is probably known for its porches later on. You know, you go down some of the areas like going to Decatur and areas, and the porch wasn't that large. It was usually small. Also, there were a lot of glass porches on the side. So you had the kind of the sun porch. That was the thing to really have probably in the 20s. All the way up and down Ponce de Leon, you see these wonderful old homes. You know, they didn't have the great porches. And then you look at even going down West Paces Ferry and down Habersham, there were some houses that had porches. There were some grand old kind of revival homes that were there, even a Beaux-Arts. But most of them didn't have porches. I think porches have come about from our appreciation of maybe that New Orleans to Natchez. And as the world's gotten smaller, I think we see it as sometimes maybe a little bit of a statement rather than to be lived on. Although I think we see more and more being lived on.
Speaking about how it's lived on, what do people covet now about a porch? What kind of place do they want it to be?
When I was building, and that's how we first started, I wanted to build something as good as they did 100 years ago. So I would go out and look at it, and I could draw it. Then I had to figure out how in the heck to do it when I cut it in section. Typically, it wasn't plywood. It was typically individual boards. It was, if it was beadboard, it was not a 4x8 sheet. It was something that was put up with loving care, and how the piers were done, and how the columns related to the piers, and even looking at railings is just amazing. What was done with the handrail and the shoe. And I remember the most magical moment of all was walking down Charleston in Savannah and actually reaching over and touching a windowsill and realizing that it was 3 inches thick. And then translating that back into today's building vernacular. And we did the same thing on porches. We did the same thing with, the old porch, which was so great, is you could set your drink on the rail. You could sit on the rail. Today, it's got to be, 36 inches or 42 inches high. And now what we do is we try to figure out a way, how do we do that when you're seated on the porch? When you look out, that the rail doesn't hit you in the eye. So we'll try to find different ways of doing to extend that. It may be a cable. It may be something else. But we try to make sure that when you're seated, you're looking at the sidewalk, or you're looking out over your field, or you're looking out to enjoy it. And that's what made the porch so great back then.
I'm gonna sit on the porch and pick on my old guitar. I'm gonna lay on my back and laugh at my lucky star. And then I'm gonna fly away and never come back someday, unless I thought I would land right close to where you are.
You're listening to Sidewalk Radio. Today's show, Passion for Porches, brought to you by Perkins & Will. And now let's turn the page to the woman who actually wrote the book on porches, author Jocelyn Donlan and her book, Swinging in Place.
I think the porch is a simple place in the sense that you go out there to relax, to, drink a glass of tea, to watch the passersby, and to have some sense of connectedness with the neighborhood. But I think it's also a really complicated place in terms of power dynamics, you know, who is controlling the space, who's allowed onto the space, who's allowed to pass through the space into the interior of the home. So it's kind of, it's a gateway, you know, it's a transitional space between the inside of the home and the outdoors. And, you know, people use it to kind of exert a sense of power and identity.
How do they use a porch to exert power and identity?
Well, historically you have, particularly in terms of race and class, you know, you have these barriers where, you know, there was a day when African Americans weren't allowed to walk onto the front porch of a white person's home, made to enter through the back door. There's Faulkner's novel, Absalom, where the main character, who was poor white, wasn't able to enter through the front portico, and he was turned away by a slave who was positioned higher than he was in the novel. So you have that kind of, you know, very obvious, strict dynamic. But then, you know, you just have a kind of, I don't know, less severe regulation. You know, you have neighbors watching neighbors, so that there's that public sense of being viewed and keeping your behavior more appropriate for public. But, you know, I think now, if you want to talk about the porch today...
Yeah, let's talk about how the porch has evolved over that time.
Yeah, a lot of people want to say that it's disappeared, but I don't think that it has. I think that it's just moved to the backyard. A lot of people, you know, now when they're building new homes, they want a porch, but they want a little more privacy than what the front porch affords. I mean, for my grandmother, being on the porch was a way to be visible and to say, you know, I'm ready for company, please stop by. And it was kind of an outdoor greeting room, but I don't think you see that as much today. I really don't.
Do you think that despite the move to the backyard for privacy, that the porch still is front and center in respects to design and architecture in the South?
I wouldn't say front and center, no. I think it's still a big part of the Southern identity. But as much in memory as in reality. You know, people have a lot of fond porch memories, even if they don't have a porch. I mean, if there's one word that goes with porches, it's storytelling. It's the conversation. And I think a kitchen table might be a modern-day porch, you know. It's not nearly as spontaneous. You know, with the porch, you get the passerby, but a porch to be used, I want to say properly, you know, it's for extended conversation. It's for people to kind of lollygag and gossip and tell stories.
Sounds nice.
Yeah. It is nice, and I think that's one reason why, you know, people hold on to it.
This place for gathering and conversation obviously goes wherever people go, and you're in Japan right now, where we're having this call from. What's the porch culture there, and how does it compare to your upbringing in the South?
Yeah, there's a structure on the Japanese home called the engawa, and gawa means side, and en means meeting. So it's like a meeting place. It's always on the south side of the house. Japanese homes don't. The neighborhoods are not organized so much where you have a front space and a back space. You have a south side and a west side and a north side and an east side. And the engawa is always on the south side. And much like the southern porch, it's disappearing from modern homes because it's kind of a luxury, but it's still very much central to an identity. But homes that do have it, it's a different space architecturally. It's like a long hall along the south side of the house. There's no furniture. And there are two sets of sliding doors that you can manipulate. One set of sliding doors, you know, faces the street. and you can open those, and then there's another set of sliding doors inside, you know, that go into the home, that lead into the home. So you can open the outside doors, close the inside doors, and you have a public space. So it's much more of a shape-shifting kind of place.
That's,
you know,
cool.
That sometimes it's outside, sometimes it's inside. But the memories are very similar. Sitting on the engawa to talk to the neighbors, children playing, eating watermelon, setting off fireworks.
I remember a time when the bloom was on the cutting, when our hearts chased the clouds like the swallow on the wing, when our cares, which were already few, were soon forgotten, just sitting on the front porch swing. Oh, we'd sit every Sunday and watch the married ladies, and we'd dream of white dresses and church bells in the spring, and they'd talk and paint their nails while they let us hold their babies, sitting on the front porch swing.
You're listening to Sidewalk Radio. I'm your host, Gene Kansas. Today's show, Passion for Porches. We idealize the porch as our own private, tranquil environment, but we perhaps don't properly appreciate that it's also an ecosystem.
So my name is Uriel Kitron, and I'm the chair of the Department of Environmental Studies at Emory University. And my research interests are primarily diseases carried by insects. So things like West Nile virus, Lyme disease, malaria. And I'm very interested in what's happening in the urban environment and the impact of how we change our lifestyles, how we change the environment, impact those diseases. Several mosquito species and other insects and other mammals and birds do very well in environments that have been, that are anthropogenic, means having been changed drastically by humans. And the mosquito that carries the West Nile virus and the mosquitoes that bite us during the day, which are different ones, do very well in human-made environment. There's a different group of mosquitoes that carry malaria.
And what about those? Tell us about the malaria-carrying mosquitoes.
So they are a group called Anopheles. They are found primarily outside of towns. They don't do well in a very urbanized environment because they need reasonably clean water to develop in, which is hard to find. There used to be a lot of malaria in the U.S., in the South, in Georgia, and even around the Atlanta area. But with urbanization and with changes in our lifestyle, malaria is not an issue anymore.
Well, let's talk about that, because this show, which you're a guest on, is the Southerner's Passion for Porches.
Mm-hmm.
But the porch certainly has played a role beyond a pretty place to sit and talk about, you know, the day.
The porches used to be a good place to get bitten by mosquitoes. I mean, they still are if they're not screened, but we just don't spend so much time in them.
But there was a lot of research and work that went into eradicating malaria, and it turned out to be the porch that kind of intervened, right?
In part, yeah. I think what is interesting about malaria in the U.S., that especially in the North, but even in much of the South, much of it was reduced before we even understood how it was transmitted. And that is because once we isolate ourselves from the mosquitoes, once we stay inside to watch TV, then we're not exposed to the mosquitoes at night. In the South, that was true in part, but also there was, you know, trying to deal with the larvae. People were spraying, people were putting oil on the larvae, people were educating school children about mosquitoes, etc. So all those played a role. But I would say that as important was a change in the way we conduct our leisure time in the evenings.
Well, and that's what I was going to say. Part of the charm, though, of the porch, for me, and I think for a lot of other people, you're out on the porch, you're watching fireflies, yeah, you're hearing the crickets, and it's nice. Tell us about some of the other insects that you might encounter, either audibly or visually.
Right. So, I mean, the truth is, in the porch, we kind of create a very nice environment for many insects, other arthropods like spiders, and other creatures as well, you know, including like, you know, reptiles, and, you know, birds would come and nest. So what we created in the port is an environment that provides the protection of the house nearby, often, you know, the protection from the elements during the daytime. And we produce an environment where are usually, you know, it's a nice place to be for us and for the insects. So often if you have like an outside porch, there's a whole fauna there. You'll have the mosquitoes, you'll have some beetles, you'll have spiders that may feed on the mosquitoes and the beetles. You may have a gecko that will feed on everything else. So you create a whole environment there. And initially it was probably, you know, the insects that were around anyhow, but then it probably selected for insects that do better in those kind of environment. That, you know, okay, you know, if you'll spray a little bit, they will survive. You know, if you'll try and smash them, they'll manage. So I think gradually, if you create a human-made environment, the composition of the insects and the rest of the animal changes.
Well, I wasn't planning on asking this, but yeah. I am curious. What's the best way to get rid of a mosquito without spraying?
The best way is to find out where the larvae are and where the eggs are. Getting rid of adult mosquitoes generally is very difficult and not that effective. Getting rid of larvae is relatively easy. So emptying, basically, if you have, you know, let's say you live in a house and you have the property around you, walk around the property, look where there is standing water, climb up and look at the gutters. Once you do that, if you still have a lot of mosquitoes when you come out, and this seems to be a year where we're encountering, I know, like in the bushes in our front yard where our dog likes to hang out, there are a lot of mosquitoes, then maybe ask your neighbors. I would say if you can clear the water, the standing water, from the houses around you, you did most, you're the most effective.
Oh, like lovers in the morning, and I love her at night. Yes, I love her. Oh, I love her when the moon is shining bright. And I love her in the springtime. And I love her in the fall. But last night, on the back porch, I loved her best of all.
We've talked a lot about the nostalgia for porches, and nothing really sums that up quite as well as the rocking chair. So, fittingly, we're going to end today with a discussion with designer Kathleen Oskadal and her updated vision of the rocking chair.
The story of my chair is, the name is Sawa. It means reawakening or rebirth, which felt like to me what my experience in the Peace Corps was at that time in my life. It was kind of like a turning point where I was able to kind of accept how I was and how I'm going to move forward and not try to keep changing my personality to be a different kind of more extroverted person, but work with the strengths that I have and be happy with that, with who I am. And that's why part of the story works into my experience going to design school, because I found that to be so fitting, because you can communicate so much without speaking. You're using visual cues and you can say a lot and you can say it pretty profoundly and speak to people more emotionally.
Well, tell us about the chair itself.
So the chair is it's kind of like a wishbone shape. There's not many pieces. It's two main kind of like arms that are like the sides of a wishbone that join at the top. And then there's slots of wood that connect those two larger pieces. And that's where you sit on those slats between the two like wishbone arms, and then there's a rope connected from the top, and then it goes down to the two ends of the wishbone, so it hangs from three different pieces of the rope. And you just, the way I wanted it to work is that you can just throw it over a tree limb or a porch beam or even a beam inside your house.
The thing that caught my attention is that it's a really pleasant combination between both a rocking chair and a swing, two things that you would find commonly on porches, but it's its own new chair.
One part of it is that it's not, so most chairs are grounded, like seated on the earth, where so you're kind of like it's stationary in one place, but a hanging chair, it feels a little less stable, it's a little more exciting, it's kind of, a, you know, more adventurous, and there's a little bit of delight in that being suspended. And I wanted to bring that into my chair to be something kind of unexpected. I wanted it to be something that would be light and easy to move around, because that kind of works into my ideals of being able to not necessarily be pinned down, that you have to create your life in a certain way, but you can be fluid and flexible and change your path. And that's the story of the chair. So I made it, and that's what it's about. So I just keep explaining it. I can't not explain it. It's part of what it is.
Sexy baby, sweet loving daddy, let me be your rocking chair. Just rock away from here. Let's get it on. Come on, baby, let me be your rocking chair. Just rock away from here.
I'd like to thank my guest today, Jim Strickland, Uriel Kitrone, Jocelyn Donlan, and Kathleen Oskadal. Of course, I'd also like to thank our sponsor, Perkins & Will, ideas and buildings that honor the broader goals of society. Sidewalk Radio can be enjoyed anytime from anywhere by visiting us on iTunes. While you're there, please make sure to rate and review us. I'm your host, Gene Kansas. You've been listening to Sidewalk Radio. See you next month.